The Guardian.
I'm sitting in the green room of the Comedy Theatre, or the Pinter Theatre, as it should be known now, and I'm joined by Miss Tandy Newton.
Hello, my darling.
How are you? You're going on the stage. Well, quite so. You're going to rehearse a bit now for Death and the Maid.
Yes, I am. We've started our previews and we've got our first night coming up on Monday, so this is crunch time. Mm-hmm. It's Tuesday. So what we've been doing is rehearsing all day. We do our preview in the evening, which has an audience, and we're basically performing the play. And then Jeremy Heron, the director, will give us notes the following morning, and then we work through the notes.
So when you go to these previews, which I used to do as a student, you think previews, oh, it can't be that much different to the final performance. When you get your notes, do you go away and tweak and try something out the next night?
Definitely. Every night. I mean, sometimes it's really dramatic, like he'll completely change the blocking of a scene. But it's exciting, and it makes me a lot less precious about, you know, getting everything perfect on the night. We're still exploring. And I think that we've got to keep that sense of freedom, even when we're performing it after press night. I hope so, anyway.
That must be entirely different from what you're used to, because it's been a long time since you were on the London stage.
Never been.
Never been on the London stage. No. Have I been on the London stage more than you? National Youth Theatre
days? I think you have. I'm about 18 years ago, I was in a performance of the Vagina Monologues, where I just played one of the monologues on stage. Loved it. I love being on stage, mm-hmm. you know, and I've given talks or, you know, hosted things and been on stage. I'm very comfortable, but actually a full performance of a play, never done before.
Wow. So, I mean, how do you, because given that you've done so many films, really, if we think back 20 years, I don't want to remind you, but...
No, it's that long, 22. Yeah.
22 years.
Flirting was the first.
Yeah.
Lovely. And Retreat, which we'll talk about in a minute, is the latest. Out to the cinemas and on DVD shortly, DVD Blu-ray.
Is it?
Yes. Okay. The one I got was Blu-ray.
Oh, my God. So it's going to be out at the cinema and DVD at the same time?
Yeah, I know. Everything's
changed.
I know. Everything's changed. She says flirting. Oh, my God.
I remember Betamax.
Well, now you're going back to even further. This is kind of, you know, this is flexing the muscles of acting. So what are you doing different? Or are you having to learn a whole new skill set? Because most of the time people are trained. And you didn't even, I mean, no offence to you, but you didn't really even train.
I trained as a dancer, absolutely. Which has come into, it's useful up to a point, just in terms of, you know, when you're on stage, you really have to have physical charisma as well as, you know, the other side of the performance. But funnily enough, the 90 minutes of performing the play, now that we've got to the place where we're doing that and we've got a shape to it and I understand what I'm doing, that's bliss. It really is bliss. It's just the nirvana of acting, because you get to create the whole arc of the character. You have the audience right there so that you're infused with their energy as well. The thing that's been incredibly challenging has been the rehearsals, having to get to this point. And I've basically had to condense years of theatre training into the 4 weeks that I've also been rehearsing, you know, with the other actors for the play. Because it's a whole different skill set, you know, the voice projection, inhabiting the stage, an awareness of the audience, not blocking the other actors. It's very, very technical. And then once the technique is in place, then you can really do what I'm used to doing, which is being emotional, being spontaneous.
What have you been doing for voice training? Been booming around the house?
I go to Wormwood Scrubs with my dog. I just stand in the middle of it, imagine that the prison inmates are my audience, and I friggin' give them a soliloquy. That's what I do.
Have any of them thrown anything out of their barred windows?
Oh, God. No, they haven't yet. But that's what I've been doing. I've been just, you know, it's more about intention, and it's about communication. And I think it's also just the common sense of when you're in a space like that and you know you're talking to people who are a good, you know, 100, 200 yards away from you, up in the gods, it's just you've obviously got to project to be heard. Mm-hmm. And I think my dance training was useful in that respect, in that I know how to open up a performance to communicate to.
You have one of the finest necks on screen or on stage, Mess. I've always thought you have a great neck.
Well, thank you very much.
The being on stage, it's interesting. You're on the London stage for the first time, and you look around at all the pictures of all the theatres as one wanders through, and obviously there's some, you know, a gallery of famous people all at the same time. You do stand out as being the most blackface on those posters, which I think I didn't really notice it until I was actually walking here today.
The most or the only?
I think you're probably the only. Yeah,
right,
I don't want to denigrate someone who may be popping up somewhere, but you're certainly a lead. it's a casting that I didn't ever consider. That was odd casting, obviously, for the area. Yeah. But it is odd to see a black face on the London stage, probably in the audience.
And it's funny, actually, because it was never mentioned from when I was offered the role through rehearsals. It's never even occurred to me. The only thing I've thought is how fantastic that once again I'm in a role by virtue of being a successful actress that has actually, my success has taken me out of being black or white or whatever into just being a talented performer. And I think that how terrific that is. But at the same time, we've got to get to the point where we're thinking about actors of all skin colour when we're casting roles, you know. And I find it endlessly frustrating when I can see roles that could have been played by any number of different, you know, racial, you know, different ethnicities. And I know damn well that they weren't even opened up to those.
Do you think the audiences respond to the casting of a black face or an Indian face? Would that ethnicity identify more with someone?
I think that people want to feel reflected. I think that they want to go and... I think theatre is such a visceral experience. You want to feel part of it. And you're more likely to if you can identify with the characters on stage, which is why, interestingly enough, since I've been doing these previews, there are many more black faces in the audience, which I'm so thrilled about, because they feel more able to relate to me, even though I'm like you or I'm like, you know, everybody else. But that's not the point. They feel able to relate. Mm. Because normally when I go to theatre, which I do often, I'm the only brother in the audience. And I just feel... Of course I question, like, how come? And is it economics? Is it, you know... And I think it's just, you don't relate. Whereas when I'm down in, you know, I go and see Panto every Christmas down in Brixton. And, no, not in Hackney City Empire. Wonderful. And it's not just black. It's black, white, everybody's there. Yeah. Because they relate to the mixed ethnicity on the stage.
Do you think that... I mean, I've been in cinema audiences that it depends where you go, where if you go to Peckham or whatever, or the Holloway Road, somewhere like that, you get a large proportion of black audiences for whatever film it is. You were recently in All the Coloured Girls, a film which I really, actually, no one seemed to like. I really liked it. You had a great part in that.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
And that was clearly a coloured experience, if I'm allowed to call it that now.
Well,
yeah.
Have a go. See what happens.
That must have attracted huge black audiences.
Well, funnily enough, Tyler Perry, who directed that film, is a phenomenon in the States. He hasn't crossed the pond. Bizarre to me. I didn't know who he was when he offered me his first movie, and this is quite a long time ago. And finally, we got to work together on For Coloured Girls. I had a tiny opening in this country, and all the people that have seen it, not all of them, but the ones that have communicated with me, just said, why? Why wasn't this everywhere in England? Yeah. Because black people who could very much relate to the movie... felt really sort of were disappointed that this wasn't available for them. Yeah. And I think that the more people of colour you get on stage, the more people of colour you get in the cinema, the more people of colour are going to want to go, you know.
I'm assuming for your current film, Retreat, which we mentioned before, where you're Cillian Murphy's wife, things aren't going too well between the two of you. You go to a swept away cottage. I don't even know what the script would have said, but I presume it didn't specify what colour you were in that. And it was good to see that it's not even mentioned in the script at all.
Well, no, I mean, you know, Cillian and I are playing sort of the parsley chopping massive from Queen's Park, you know, and I live in Queen's Park, London, and, you know, it's a wonderfully varied, mixed...
Do you use parsley a lot?
Love my herbs, or my herbs, as I should say. And you know, that's my reality is a multicultural, ethnic, you know. Mm. So that's what we were reflecting.
And I suppose they sort of stuck out. Well, they would have stuck out if they'd gone to a sort of more populated island, but actually there was no one
there
at all.
There was no one else there. So it's like, that's what you get. There you go. Yeah, it's interesting.
It's a strong part for you, that one. I haven't seen you... I don't know if I'm wrong, but I've not seen you handle a weapon before, Ms. Newton.
I don't think I have, you know. No, I did. It's a movie which didn't come out here at the cinema, Vanishing on 7th Street.
Oh.
I was totally down in that. Yeah, Vanished, exactly. But no, a lot of gun handling this last couple of years. Yeah. But what I'm glad about with the old gun handling of both The Retreat and this is that it's not sort of cartoon violence, pop violence, you know, and it's not a gun to look cool.
No,
or, it's... You know, or a gun to be... you know, to be powerful. Yeah. And
not like if you'd done it in Mission Impossible 2. I don't think you had have a gun in that. Can't remember.
No, I hadn't.
It's just a bad driver.
I think I had a syringe, which I then killed, had hurt myself with. No, but do you know what I mean?
It's a kind of rickety old violence. Hunting rifle, though.
Yeah, and it's not pop violence. That, you know, the weapons that I'm using, both in Retreat and God knows in Death and the Maiden, it's a gun for the purpose of what a gun is for. And I'm, you know, the play is about lots of things, and it's not about gun violence.
No, but gun porn in any way.
Yeah, although it is something which is very, very much part of our culture, this whole notion of, you know, gun power. Weapons, knives, and I'm glad that I'm not perpetuating, you know, that.
Is it just a coincidence, or is that something you would actually actively make a choice about before picking up the weapon?
What do you mean?
Well, if you saw a script that required, you know, perpetuation of gun violence as myth or whatever, or would you kind of say, you know, it's not for me, you're happier doing it when it's dramatically necessary, when it's a dramatic necessity?
Yeah, I mean, there have been a number of scripts that I've been offered where the violence I've felt is gratuitous, and so I won't either. I'll suggest that they lessen it. There have been two in previous years, and in both situations they didn't want to, and I just thought it was pornography.
Mm-hmm. Are these bigger Hollywood films?
Not particularly, but they're, you know, American, mm-hmm. big American movies where the baddie that I was supposed to be playing was enjoying the violence, and I think violence is extremely complex, and yes, it can be enjoyed, but it's with a sadistic, dysfunctional element which has to be explored and has to be recognised.
I think you would scare me as a baddie, you know.
In one movie, she would skin her victims. I mean, you know.
You doing that?
No.
Stick to parsley.
Awful. Yeah, I'm going to stick to chopping my parsley.
It is a pleasure to see you, because it's great to see you in a good, meaty British film as well.
Will you come and see the play, even though I know you don't like sitting in theatres anymore?
Okay, I'll see Death and the Maiden. And do you know what? I mean, I've seen Death and the Maiden, but I've seen the film with Sigourney Weaver. I've never seen the actual play of it. So, yeah. Yes, all right then.
I don't want to force you out of your comfort zone, but maybe you'll make an exception just this one.
For you. Are you shaving your head like Sigourney Weaver?
No, I'm not. I haven't seen the film. I thought I'd wait till afterwards because I'm too intimidated.
Yeah, no, you're quite right. I mean, and it'll be different as well because, you're smaller.
I'm smaller. Mind you, my daughter is named after the character she plays in Alien.
That's right. I never forgot. Normally I do links like that. You've done them for me.
Yeah, I have huge, huge respect for Sigourney Weaver and Ripley.
Yeah. Well, please God, you can compare notes with her one day in a big film. Yeah. Tandy, lovely to see you. Lovely to see you so at home in London's theatre with a gilded mirror and all of that, spotlights and all that. I think it's great. You'll be taking off your mask and makeup forevermore. Tandy, lovely to see you. And congratulations on Retreat too.
Thanks, my love. Thank you.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.